Welcome to episode number 4 of Antimeme. Our guest for this show is going to be Evan Olson, and this month's topic is going to be about those fashion fuckers.
I'm leaving the wife, 2 footers along the royal. I'm breaking my heart, about compassion to the third world surgery. Bye-bye, real McCoy, not real if I was royal. Now I'm a material boy, there's nothing in this world I think I need. Now I'm shopping, I'm not stopping, always been a stop to buy, and always spend my knees in my way. Now I'm shopping, I'm not stopping, always been a stop to buy, and I don't spend my knees somehow, I swear. Born out of the mouse, full of gold in my spirit, next that might be house, 6 bedrooms and pool, job for me, I'll live like a star.
Hey, welcome to episode number 4 of Antimeme. Our guest for this show, like I said in the beginning, is Evan Olson. The show is going to be about a little bit of fashion, a little bit about corporations fucking with our mind and exploiting us. Evan, did you want to give a little brief synopsis of what the content's going to be about?
Well, what I want to talk about is basically re-examining yourself in a fashion in which you can differentiate between what desires and needs that you actually need as a human being and which ones are placed there by advertisers in the form of these memes and so forth.
Sounds good. Sounds like this show's going to be awesome. Okay. I'm going to break into the emails real quick here. I got about 4 of them for this month. First one, hey Logic, found your site via Newsreel. Really enjoying the show so far. You're giving out some solid tips. Keep up the good work. I got into the whole black spotting deal after watching Sean Kay explain the concepts in patrolling. Come across a problem, though, and I thought that as you've probably been at this game much longer than I, you might already have the solution. I have myself a messenger bag that I use in day-to-day life. Really solid bag, good construction, hasn't died on me unlike other bags I've had, but it has a nice big nasty corporate ad on the side. Problem is, the damn thing is stitched in. If I black it out, it would still be noticeable because of the bumps. There doesn't seem to be a way to unpick the stitching without pulling half the bag apart, and that would probably be probably reduce the lifespan quite a bit. I'm not exactly Mr. Sewing Expert. I thought of ditching it for another bag, but it's really good quality, and I abhor waste, and yeah, that makes sense. Sorry for the length of the email. Thanks, Finite. So this email is from Finite. One suggestion I have for that, well, first off, Evan and I were talking about this a little bit before the show, but as far as unstitching it, usually that's not a problem unless it's tied to the stitching of the normal seams, but usually the stitching is only attached to the bag for the logo, so you could usually safely remove that. But another idea I would have is just getting some whiteout, and above the logo, just, you know, write out the word fuck. So say it was a Nike logo, and it would say fuck Nike. That's something I did with one of my DeVry t-shirts. I had it say, like, it said DeVry on it, and it said, DeVry doesn't give a fuck about your privacy. Little hint to is what school fucked me over in the old school freak episode, but yeah, that was them. But anyway, anything you'd want to say about that one, Evan?
I'm just saying, you know, you don't have to be a sewing expert to know how to sew, and it's really a simple concept. And with stitching, really, it's just sewed through there, and you can normally, with stitching of logos, you can normally cut the threads. And, you know, pull them out. It's pretty easy. It's not a huge thing to do.
Yeah, it's not too hard. I've I've sewed patches onto shit, which I've taken off now because they're advertising, you know.
And even for they actually, people. In the sewing world, I know this because I took home Mac a long time ago, they actually have a tool designed to take out stitching, and that can be really useful.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called, though.
But hey, if you don't have that, sharp knife works just fine. But on to the next email. X Logic, had to say that you have a great show with awesome ideas to express. One thing I was thinking while listening to your first ep about black spotting, most people that I have experienced like the company that they wear. I have yet to understand this thinking. These people, they in turn don't mind advertising for them. So with this thinking on their part, they must agree with what the company does, like sweatshops and whatnot. Keep up the great show and waiting for the next one. This is from Twirls. On that, yeah, that's kind of fucked up. It's a weird brainwashing thing, but in a way, they do support their company so much that they don't mind wearing the logo because it is instilled in their brain that, you know, that logo is what makes them cool. And, you know, and fuck that. If a logo is what makes you cool, you're fucking pathetic. And I don't want to flame people, but just try to think, you know, if the logo is making you cool, you really got to reassess who you are as a person. Are you the logo or are you yourself? But anyway, keep things quick. I'll get to the next email here. Says, hello, I have just started listening to your show. Episode 3 was the first one for me. It has been a long time coming since I've thought about such things as culture jamming and corporate influence on my daily life. Shortly after listening to your show, I went to work at a restaurant, and it began to dawn on me how misleading we are with our advertising. For example, we sell chocolate chip cookies, which we get frozen in bulk. While we do bake them daily, I find it very misleading that we advertise them as fresh baked cookies. I know this is a small change compared to a lot of other things, but I think that is still a bad thing. I feel like a bad person every time someone orders the cookies because I'm lying to them. Just wanted to thank you for helping open my eyes. Jam on, Ponyboy. Because he also has a show he's talking about at the end of the email, but it's more like a personal thing. But, yeah, I mean, small things count, too. Just every little thing counts that you notice in... You know, just awareness, that's a big thing. That's what memes are about, is awareness. So they're about thoughts and logos and symbols and all that shit. So the more aware we are, the better we are for it.
And I just like to add, you can plant an anti-meme by saying to your coworkers, or even to the customers jokingly, I wouldn't make a big deal out of it, but, you know, our cookies come in frozen and we cook them here, so they're fresh baked cookies, but that really doesn't mean... that we're making cookies out in the back, and just think about it.
Yeah, small thing, but when you pass it along, yeah, it's spreading the virus, you know?
I've worked for many corporations, and they can't fire you for saying that, but I've had some very upset superiors that don't like the way I address some issues, and, you know.
The best advice for that is just be as subtle as possible. I mean, that's how the corporations do it. Well, they're a little bit more blatant now, but...
Yeah.
The counter strategy, be subtle, and it works really well. But last email here. Hey, Logic, if you want a good meme to disabuse, here's a few related memes to work on. Diamonds are forever. A diamond tells her you love her. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. What do these mean? This, of course, means we want you to believe that love means you will buy a diamond. We want this so much that we will invent a tradition through marketing to ensure that you will buy diamonds. Why do we do this? Because we want to, we went and purchased as many of the world's diamond suppliers as possible and then sell the diamonds at an inflated price. Who is this we? De Beers, of course. In the 20th century, they invented the diamond tradition for the sole purpose of inflating the price of diamonds. They produced one of the most successful marketing blitzes in the process. The person that emailed me, which is to rename Anonymous, but... Yeah, I mean, that's how a lot of corporations with no purpose get their shit out, is they brainwash you to think that it has purpose. It's one of the things we'll cover in this show content. But to not waste any time, we'll get to the anti-commercial, which is very appropriate for this last email.
Thank you.
Okay, that was one creepy fucking commercial, and it, like the other ones we play here, didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, the things, if you had troubles hearing what they're actually saying in the background, it was like Radiance, and they say De Beers, and then Mystical, Romantic, Seductive, Brilliant. Who fucking cares? I mean, it's a fucking rock that you can see through. How's that romantic or seductive? But fucking A, whatever. I don't care. Another shitty commercial. What do you think, Evan?
This commercial is just a classic example of implanting ideas into people's heads. First thing that I noticed was that they call it exclusive. And that exclusive is kind of a word that can be manipulative in advertising, because you're saying, well, if you get this, you're going to be exclusive. You know, the exclusiveness of this is going to rub off on you.
To add to that, actually there's businesses out there right now, or scientists, that actually have made a way to duplicate diamonds. They can actually make diamonds factory produced now. So exclusive? No, I think not. Fuck you,
DeBeers. Exactly. And, you know, just looking back at the history of the diamond industry, it's a history that has been plagued by child slavery, and it still is to this day. In fact, Pat Robertson is deeply involved with the diamond industry and gets a lot of money from the funds that are made by these children that cut diamonds and get paid shit, and it all goes to companies like De Beers. De Beers is a slave labor company, yeah. Hands down.
Fuck them. Okay, so on to the show topic?
The show topic that I want to talk about is I recently read this book called The Wastemakers by Vance Packard, and it was an interesting book that I got at a secondhand store. And it's like an overview of commercialism in American society. And it focuses a lot on commercialism after the war, because we had a massive industrial complex that was built in order to make this war machinery. And after the war, it was gone. And there were these people that had been working in factories. They needed jobs. And so basically the job of advertisers was increased to create needs for the consumers, and there are just classical examples of this. One of them would be the idea of women and men's deodorant. That is a created idea. That isn't something that has been around for, you know, as long as we can think of, as I thought before I read this book. Actually, before the 50s era, men and women used the same deodorant, and they would share it, and the deodorant companies made a conscious effort to create a need in American society so that they could sell deodorant to men and to women, increasing the amount of deodorant that they sell by 50%. That's a huge increase. And they also did this, getting back to the diamond industry. It used to be men gave women an engagement ring, and that was it. But the jewelry industry made a conscious effort to create a need for jewelry by saying, women, or the man gives the woman a ring, and the woman consequently gives the men a ring, you know, increasing the market share 50%. You're selling more. And the examples just go on and on. And here in the book was a good quote. It was called, "Every family needs two homes." And who else does this come from but the Douglas Fir Plywood Association? So there are a lot of different interests out there that are, you know, trying to create needs in order to, for their own self-benefit. And it's really important to look at how things are marketed to you. And why do you say you need a computer or two computers? Why do you buy a cologne? Why do you need to smell good? Why? Is there really a point? I mean, obviously the consensus is you don't want to smell bad.
Yeah, you don't want to smell like shit, but at least, you know, you don't want to... Basically, you just don't want to smell, so who gives a shit about the actual scents, like a woman scent or a man scent? Who cares? You just don't want to smell like shit, so you need one thing for that, and of course, you can share, you know, like you're saying.
Yeah. Another example is colors. There are men colors, and there are women colors.
What's your favorite color?
Yeah, and exactly. I remember in grade school being what's your favorite color? You know, that's really kind of how this whole thing starts with fashion. And, you know, I remember men or little boys can't have pink as a favorite color. Why? Because that's a girl color. And that all plays into the marketing plans of fashion designers for clothes, because then they can make pink clothes and they can make, you know, whatever male colors are, and you're selling more. And then if you make a shirt, same shirt, except you're dyeing it three different colors. There's a red shirt, a blue shirt, and a green shirt. Well, if a person wants a red shirt, a green shirt, and a blue shirt, they're going to buy three shirts instead of, you know, the one shirt, which would be if they made it in one color. And this goes along with cycling the fashion cycles, which you can see. If you go into Sears, you look at the walls, the clothes, like, all matches, like, you know, the same hue, the same, you know, and they cycle through, and they're not the same year after year. And what Vance Packard says in his book, and he, you know, he gives several examples, that this is on purpose in order to make you think that, you know, you need to stay with the cycles, and you need to maintain your in-ness with the fashion cycle by buying new clothes every new cycle in order to match everyone else that is going to do the same thing. And there's also a reason we saw this coming out in the 50s, and that was the mediums of radio and TV, which before print is a much less effective way to advertise than TV and radio. And the reason for this, I'm not quite sure, but they knew it right off the bat, and they started using this. And
just a really good medium. I mean, an effective medium, an advertiser doesn't really mean that the TV in general is like the magic button for brainwashing people, but since it's a great medium, they'll use a great medium, just like the internet now, like pop-ups and all that shit. That's another great medium, so they use a great medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now they can, with the internet, they can target consumers. They actually do, you know, in the forms of cookies, they track where you go on the internet. And then they look at what you're interested in, and they specifically send you ads to these things, and it really is a form of manipulation, and it's written off as free speech. But humans are simple animals, that human behavior is hard to understand, but it's easy to realize what can make people do certain things, and advertisers have in fact seen these weaknesses in human behavior and used it to promote consumption, which increases profit margins and stuff of these companies. So the advertising industry is really all about manipulating the consumer. And I have a great tidbit of information that I got from this book that really surprised me. There was this producer in the 60s called John E. Hasty, and he had made shows for both Hollywood and television, and he was quoted as arguing that television could reach its full potential as an advertising medium only when advertising men produced the shows. And this is his actual words right here. TV viewers cannot be regarded as an audience to be entertained. They are prospects for what the sponsor has to sell. This fact constitutes the show's reason for being. Thus, in TV production, the selling motive stands as the dominant factor. Now, this was in the 60s, and as we can see through popular television now, the idea that commercialism infiltrates the medium of television and radio, and we can see this now with companies sponsoring programs on television shows. Well, let's take one, the movie iRobot. Audi was, you know, gave them money so that they would use that car in that movie. And while that seems minuscule, it really is statistically proven that people see those things, and it really influences the way they buy things.
Yeah, and speaking of iRobot, I mean, with Will Smith and his fucking Converse shoes, I mean, it couldn't get any more blatant, where he's like, oh, I love my Converse, oh, I'm running so fast, oh, so great. And why would Converse do that, you know? They're always this, like, you know, skater punk, like, rebellious shoe. Well, I'll tell you why. Fucking Phil Knight, Nike, bought Converse. That's why it's such a big deal now. So fuck Converse, too. Again,
mm-hmm.
Black
Converse
spot.
Converse was made in the United States for a long time until Phil Knight, you know, bought it, and Nike bought it, and they immediately shipped all manufacturing processes overseas because it's much cheaper. And Phil Knight has been quoted as saying, and if you've seen the Michael Moore movie, the big one, you would know this, is Americans don't want to make shoes. That's just the way that these guys come from. They're not concerned with Americans. They're concerned with how much money they can make. And that is their whole existence, and that is their whole living. And us as consumers are fighting against the power that these people have.
can kind of go in and talk about how toys are made for kids to program them early on, you know.
Yeah, toys, as we all know growing up, are, you know, tend to be the plastic crappy toys that are breakable and pieces of shit. And we can think of, oh, this company's dumb, who would ever do this? This is not ignorance on their part or cutting corners on their part. This is training children in order to think that things can be replaceable. Anything's replaceable, you know. You don't need to take care of your shoes because you can just buy a new pair. You don't need to take care of your car or, you know, drive your car like a maniac because, hey, when it's gone, you can just get a new one. And this is the idea that destroying our society is destroying the planet, and it really needs to stop.
And it's the idea of obsolescence. I mean, if you wanted to go into that a little bit, there's a few different ways they use things to make them obsolete.
Yeah, and that does factor into obsolescence. And the author of this book gave three definitions of obsolescence. And there's obsolescence of function, where products become obsolete when a new product that comes out performs the same function better. And this is seen in the computer world a lot, because the processors are going up in such tiny increments. And, you know, this isn't a restriction of technology. This is planned marketing to maximize the profit that you can make from this technology. Obsolescence quality is when a product breaks down or wears out at a given time, usually planned in advance by the manufacturer. And this is true for several things. I'm trying to think of something right now. Like a coffee maker. They plan for those to work for about 5 years, and it breaks, and you don't repair it, you go buy a new one.
Like
and
cars
that makes
nowadays,
them more
you know.
Money than actually repairing these products.
Yeah.
And obsolescence of desirability is where a product that is still sound in terms of quality or performance becomes worn out in our mind. And this this fits in with fashion, because that is how fashion works in the fashion cycle. They're making these clothes that aren't really, their utility isn't, you know, shrinking necessarily, and still we feel that they're worn out, we feel that they're old, and we feel like we need to replace them. And I'd like to point out another example is the radio industry had the technology for stereo and radio in 1931. Yet it wasn't released until the early 50s. And the reason for this is that the companies, you know, economically, they realized that they can make more money by selling these hi-fi stereos, and they don't even have to release stereo until the consumers have hi-fi stereos and the sales of hi-fi stereos drop. Then they can step it up and release this new technology, which they've had. And so they're releasing this technology with the mind that they're going to use it and they're going to maximize their profit, and then they're going to get the newer technology out. And this, we see this in the computer tech industry, and it really makes me wonder what is being held back because companies haven't gotten their maximum profit from the products that are being released right now.
And on the hacker side of it, with us hackers here, we don't give a shit about the newest computers. We're fucking hackers. We can do, you give us some fucking wires and a phone line and we'll do stuff, you know. It doesn't matter. With us, we'll be creative. That's what it's about in our little circle. And you don't see, in the hacker community, you don't see us bragging about who has a better computer. That's the gaming community, which they're getting fucked, mind fucked like crazy. But us, no, we'll do with what we have. But kind of running a little bit short now, did you want to give any wrapping up points at all?
I'd just like to, you know, point out, think about your desires and your needs. When you go to the mall and you see something, think about why you feel like you need that product. And really, really, you know, go through your mind and try to get a reasonable reason to need that product besides the fact that what that advertisement says that this product does and why it's saying that you may need it.
Sounds good. Is that about it, or was there anything else?
And, gosh. Oh, yeah, no, I'd also like to point out this book, that The Wastemakers, was written in the 1960, and a lot of the things that are in this book have really come true, and we've really become the commercialized society that this person was fearing might happen to him. So.
Sounds good. You got any shouts at all?
I'd like to give a shout out to you, Logic, for making the show, you know, putting it on the internet and getting people to realize the extent of that commercialization has infiltrated our society.
Not a problem for me. As far as shouts on my end, I'd probably just give shouts to one of our local coffee places over here, Counterculture Cafe. It's a 24/7 place. Love it. They have some cool shit going on. And it's not Starbucks. Before I forget, next month after Thanksgiving is Buy Nothing Day, so don't buy anything. And until next time, ask questions, including about your own opinions about what you buy and all the shit that you don't want.